Oh, it offends me to the soul to hear a robustious, periwig-painted fellow tear a passion to tatters, to very rags, to split the ears of the groundlings, who for the most part are capable of nothing but inexplicable dumb shows and noise.
Well, Handy, you better hang on to your bear bodkin, because you're going to hate this. It's John Malden and T. Quiller, your hosts for the Inexplicable Dumb Show, starting now.
Welcome to episode 161 of
The Inexplicable Dumb Show.
I'm T. Quillen.
I'm John Malden.
Hey, what's going on?
Well,
this is our second cut of this, by the way. I just want to point that out. Go ahead. I can edit that out. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, it's that time of year again.
It is.
Come on, it's Fresh Person Showcase time.
Yeah.
And we're gonna try something different for us.
Yeah, definitely.
In our history, and we have the third director, the triumvirate, as you say, coming in, Steve Wedan coming in, chat the whole thought process behind this production. We sort of determined on the fly, I guess.
A lot of this was a production meeting, so well, cool. Here it is. Want to stay current with the Inexplicable Dumb Show?
It's quick and it's easy and it's free.
Click the subscribe button at inexplicabledumbshow.com,
and you'll never have to miss an episode.
Plot, character, theme, diction or language, music and spectacle. Aristotle's six elements of tragedy. If you'd done your reading, you could see how Aristotle's poetics are to Eugenia Barber's paper canoe as Aeschylus's Oresteia is to Harold Pinter's A Kind of Alaska.
And now it's time for another excerpt from Dumb Show University.
So, we're talking Fresh Person Showcase again. It's that time of year.
Yeehaw.
Yeah. Steve Wedan is with us.
Welcome, Steve.
The triumvirate now.
Yes. Oh, wow.
Of the Father, Son, and Holy Ghost, I guess.
The Holy Goat. Amigos.
Holy Goat.
The Holy Goat.
Holy Spigot.
Holy Spigot.
anybody want to say the name of the show we're doing here? Steve, you want to mention it by
MacGyver.
Name?
It's MacGyver.
MacGyver. Yeah.
No, MacGruber. No. What is it?
McDougal's.
McDougal. Is it?
Yeah.
It's Macbeth.
Okay. Yeah, that's the show we're doing for Fresh Person Showcase. Now, let's just get it all right now. Who believes in the superstition? Are you obviously you don't, because you just said the name of, you know.
Well, when I technically in a theater.
Well, see, British will tell you don't have to. You get, if you're standing on the earth, you can't say it.
Standing on the earth?
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, I mean, they're pretty strict.
No man born of earth.
Yes. Flying in an airplane, you can say it. But.
Oh, wow. That's when I would not say it.
Well, yeah.
Flying in an airplane.
Right.
Or on a boat or,
right.
You know, on the Incline Railway in Chattanooga,
right.
I wouldn't say it.
But when you're in theater, do you say it then?
No, I try not to.
I avoid it as well. Or I tempt fate, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, what about you?
Well, I'm on the third floor of a building. And,
yeah, nothing can
I'm
happen.
I'm a literalist, so I'm not on the earth.
There you go.
Wow.
There it is.
Wow.
There it is.
The theater is way over there, so.
Yeah. Way over there. Way. I tend to think that I'm like you. I don't really push my luck when I'm in the theater and say the name. Have you directed the show? Have any of you directed or been in the show before?
I've been in the show.
You've been in the show?
Been in the show as well,
okay.
Yeah.
I directed it a couple of years ago and directed it for high school, right? And so we did this whole thing where we made a big deal out of the superstition.
Mm-hmm.
Don't say the name. We came up with this. We modified the counter curse. We,
yes.
we took all the cursing out of the counter curse, you know. But yeah, so one of you guys talk about it. Talk about the show.
John?
That's it, Steve. Deflect.
Well, my original idea was that we would drop the Mac part, put everybody in kiss makeup, and just call it Beth.
Which I'm...
And T's holding out a little bit. He hasn't quite shut the door on that one.
I think we need to take a silent vote on that.
But I guess we should explain kind of what Fresh Persons is.
Well, yeah, okay.
Prior to actually.
Start there if you want to be logical about it.
I know. Well, I've been indoctrinated by
That's
Obama.
True.
So.
Yeah. Well. Twice now.
Twice. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, First Person Showcase is for freshmen, sophomore, and newly transferred students here at MTSU's theater department to have a vehicle to showcase their talents and abilities to upperclassmen and or other faculty members who show up.
Did you write that?
A long time ago. Yes. I've been doing this for a long, long time.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Well, that sounded really good.
Well, thank you.
Not at all pre-planned either.
You do that very well.
Yeah. Thank you here at Middle Tennessee State University.
Yeah.
It's tying back into a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. He's promoing now. We have not had auditions yet. As we record this, we're still not exactly sure when or where auditions are happening.
So
we've got sliding auditions.
We do. We have.
Keep going.
If we see somebody, walking across campus, we're going to ask them to read this.
It's a new take. Really.
It is.
A new twist.
Yeah. Show's going to look a lot like that too.
No rehearsal process.
Yeah.
Just
very organic.
Yeah.
You know.
We are set on the date, right? We are going to next Friday at 3 to 5.
Yes.
Finally,
3 to 6 ish. Yeah. 3 to 5, 3 to 6, something like that. Yeah. Now, the location will be announced later. We hope it's going to be the Studio Theater, but we're still trying to solidify that. The one thing that up until this point, we have done shows that are easily divided up, meaning they're more like. Like even collections of scenes or something along those lines.
Typically they've been grouped kind of thematically.
Right. And multiple, since we're dealing with multiple directors, that just seemed like the easiest thing to do. But this year, for some reason, we decided to bite the bullet. What, other than just, hey, this will be a cool idea, what precipitated that change, do you think?
Well, because the rest of the season is a lot of original new work that nobody's been able to read or see before, which is great.
Yeah.
But
some of the scripts are actually still in development, which, again, is a good thing.
But, you know, I've always thought that we could fill the void or the hole in our seasons, whatever they may be.
Mm-hmm.
And so typically there's enough known shows that we can get away with doing the original work or the newer work. But since that's kind of been flopped around this year.
So we decided to go old school.
Mm-hmm. Give them name recognition.
There you go. There you go.
That's right.
Steve, you want to talk about how we divided it up? It's kind of, I mean, I'm trying to run an interview when I'm actually should be answering the questions at the same time with you guys. So,
well, shall I ask you?
Yeah.
Well, actually, we were just in a phone conversation, and the idea came up that why not, since we've got three directors and we've got a great play with one of probably more than one great themes. The destruction of a man's soul. Well, what do you do with three directors? It's like too many. So why not take a look at it from three points of view? Points of view is a great jumping off place for an artist in a lot of different areas, including directing. And so this play, dare I say, MB. lends itself to division, I thought, pretty easily into the supernatural, the political and military, and then the relational. So dividing it up between the three of us, I thought, worked pretty well.
Yeah, nobody really got hurt when we divided up the scenes.
We haven't begun the military part.
That's true. That is true.
And we prefer the preternatural as opposed to the supernatural.
I kind of prefer the relational. You guys you're like family to me.
Shut up, man. Okay.
Pass the turkey.
Yeah.
I've said my piece. I'm leaving now.
Yeah.
So who edited this?
Well, I did. At first. I came up with an initial cut. But, you know, the thing about... I mean... Wow. I'm such a purist when it comes to Shakespeare. I just, it's so hard for me to take any of the plays and cut anything out of them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And not because I think it's sacred or something along those lines, but I'm just like, well, all of it's really good.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, all of the dialogue and the language is beautiful. And so I started looking for just things that were repetitive, you know? And tried to pick out what I thought was the stronger imagery of the stuff that was repetitive and just started with that. And it turned out that there were three whole scenes that I thought could be cut. One of them was the big witches scene. I just cut that out completely. And then the ending scene, I just cut it out completely as well. I think that's going to work okay. And then we're all going to do our own internal cuts. Mm-hmm. Kidding about the whole scenes thing, right. By the way. I cut three scenes, but they weren't those.
Okay.
But no, I mean, and then
we're going along with it. Nobody's read the script yet.
I cut out everything except for the political military stuff. So.
We're both knitting our brows going, what?
What? I cut out little chunks of text here and there, but there were three scenes that were, I mean, short little tiny, maybe 15, 20 lines.
Cut out the old man.
Yeah, I did cut out the old man, because all he does is come on and say what happened in the last scene. You know, there's that kind of stuff that you can lose.
It's an interesting translation. Is that Riverside?
Yeah, it is.
What happened last?
Either that or
what just happened?
Make the whole play just the old man.
That's right. That's right.
This is just an expositional play.
Yeah, that's right. Have him come out between each scene. What you just saw was... no, that's not really good at all.
Playback. Repeat and repeat. Yeah. Because I can be brothers.
So I did sort of an initial cut, but the final edit of the play, we're all going to have a hand in. I mean, we're now to the point where we're sort of dividing it up we've already divided the scenes up, in terms of as we talked about earlier with the relational and the supernatural and the political military, preternatural, sorry, ubernatural. And from this point forward, we're all three, and I'm hoping you guys are listening at this point, but we're all three going to take our own individual sections of the play, and if there's anything else that we want to cut, we can. We're trying to shoot for like an hour
ish,
pushing it to an hour and a half is
hour and a half
most.
Probably, mm-hmm. I mean, traditionally we're around hour 15, hour 30.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
so if we can keep it,
yeah, around there, yeah. I think it's possible. I mean, it's not a long play to begin with, you know. I mean, it's really not.
Really short battle scenes.
Yeah.
Ding. Oh, damn it,
dude. text-wise, it's not really that long. I mean, it's I don't know what. It wound up being 90 pages on 8.5 by 11. Mm. And that's a double-spaced. So, I mean, it's really not that bad. And I think the cut as it exists right now is something like 84, 85 pages.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to say it was around when I directed it for the high school. I want to say our production came in at just shy of 2 hours. And I was going nuts with battle scenes and that. I mean, I had like casts of millions. It would look like a Cecil B. DeMille movie. It was, you know, dead bodies strewn all over the stage and all of that kind of stuff. Yeah. I think I killed everybody in the McDuff house at least twice, you know, in that production.
The cat.
Yeah. I even had the murderers killing each other. It was kind of fun.
The
you know.
Goldfish.
Yeah. To flush.
No.
But yeah, I think it's, I mean, the challenge of taking something called the Fresh Person Showcase and doing complex text or using a complex text is something that we've all kind of went, oh, do we really want to do that? So let's talk about that process. How are we going to, what's the plan for bringing these or allowing these kids to really explore this text and learn the Shakespeare technique, or if there is there's not one particular Shakespeare technique, but how are we going to help them out with that? Because I don't have a clue. I'm just making.
I noticed you put us in a very difficult position.
Yeah, that's right. How are you guys going to do that?
Shoving this off on us. I think that my first step is going to be making sure that they understand what the scenes are about.
Yeah.
The language is possibly, if not the biggest barrier, it's certainly the first barrier.
Mm.
So get over that barrier, and then we've got, a good, active, audacious sort of acting project to work on.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I'm going to
approach it. Go ahead. Do you have anything to add to that?
Ditto.
Okay, good.
You've got a playful little smile playing around your lips, and I'm wondering what's coming.
Yeah, right.
No, I agree. I think making sure that they understand the words that are coming out of their mouths once.
Yeah, and which is important in pretty much any play that you do.
Right, but I mean, especially in...
Yeah.
Or Jackie Chan movie, too.
That's, yes.
Understanding the words.
Yeah,
yeah.
Definitely. Definitely
true. To play around with the imagery and to trust the text.
Yeah, that's the big thing.
Trying to make it something else.
Trust it. Trusteth.
The text.
Yeah. I just
texteth.
The texteth. Yes. Yon text.
Yon text.
Of your. But yeah, the other thing is we gotta keep make sure we don't go English.
Yeah, or Scottish.
Well, Scottish is a little better, but it's amazing when young actors get a verse play.
They all, yeah, everybody.
Everybody becomes British. It's really odd.
Or really close to it.
Right.
You know.
Southern British.
Out, somewhere, out, damn spot.
Somewhere
damn
in spot. The channel. You know, they're in the channel somewhere.
Sinking.
Yeah. Rapidly. No, that's a good point. Well, that brings up the question of what is going to be our take on it in terms of, you know, how, are we setting it in Scotland in 1100 or are we...
I think the take is about 15%.
Okay, good. And we work cheap. So, I mean, you know, this is something we've talked about and we haven't really quite landed on yet.
Yeah,
but...
welcome to a production meeting too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. We've talked about everything from, I mean, one of the biggest concerns was how to deal with, if we do modernize it, how do we not make it so that we're firing rifles across the stage, you know, and
right.
get the intimacy of having to be right up in somebody's face when you cut their heart out.
One of those intimate moments.
Yeah, that's the relational part.
Luckily, Steve and I aren't directing the political military right. part. So
that's so much a part of this play, I think, is the not just the fact that there's combat going on, but it's absolutely brutal.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I think of Scottish weapons, I think of these big claymores
right?
know,
yeah.
coming down and actually cleaving parts of bodies off. So, yeah, how are we going to do that? We can't use distance weapons and we got to make it look good anyway. So therein is really a lot of the key, I think, to our decision making, regarding when, to set it. We could make it somewhat mythical and get around it. Hey, it's not really literal, folks.
Right.
Or we could just,
ergo the old man.
Yeah.
Coming in.
He's gone.
Just settle on a time period and place that, that works, but we just haven't decided that yet.
I mean, when we did it here, it was post-apocalyptic.
Mm-hmm.
And so all the weaponry was found. So right. you'd have bats with nails yeah. in them and, you know,
yeah.
that kind of stuff.
I thought...
So that's why we didn't have broadswords.
This is just a thought that came through my head right now is that we should set it like...
We also didn't have leafy screens, but well, that's a whole other issue.
Yeah, there's that too. A lot of people do, you know, post-apocalyptic type, type Shakespeare and productions. And they also do, you know, I'm going to use the word correct setting. You know, they're trying to go for the actual time mm-hmm. period of the play. Some people shoot for Elizabethan time period of the play. I think we should go totally prehistoric. Nobody's ever done a prehistoric Macbeth before. And it would take care of the weaponry problem. We just do it clubs and rocks.
Yeah. Shrubbery.
Now, is this one of these moments of humor done with a completely straight face?
Yeah. I hope so.
What is this boulder I see before me? Is a handle towards my hand?
The granite towards my hand. There we go.
The granite.
Yeah, the dangle.
The dangle. Yeah.
We could set it... we could do togas. They could be Greek.
We could do the Greek shape. Well, you know, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, we don't have the time or the budget to do this, but it would be cool to do a 20s version in Chicago.
Yeah, it would be. That would actually
like
be
the,
really cool.
You know, the gangsters back and forth. But so,
it's a shame we don't have the budget for that.
Yeah, we're not going to be able to rent Tommy guns or
good
Zoot suits.
Good idea. Thanks for rubbing that in our face.
Well, we could take your cut, I suppose.
Yeah, that's true. And take my cut and make it all about the costumes and Tommy guns.
We could get rid of the text then.
That's right. It's done.
We got rid of the old man.
We can get rid of anything, baby.
Happy walk out and go, not like, a, not like I just realized audio. He's not going to see the gun that I just had in my hand. Not sheep. Okay. I'm not doing that type of show.
Well, it is Scottish.
It is. It is that.
Apologies to the Scottish people in the audience.
Steve's the conscience of the group.
Well, it's about damn time.
Yeah, right. I think it's going to be, I mean, obviously I'm excited about it, you know, in terms of doing, having the opportunity to do Shakespeare, but, it's also one of my favorites. You know, I mean, I just love the text. I used to use it in the freshman theater class that I taught on out in the high school out in Texas. And I would do like a round robin reading with the students, you know, and everything. And I would just go through scene by scene, and we'd stop after each scene, and I would ask them, okay, what just happened? You guys recap it for me. And it was easy that once they read it, I mean, it was interesting that once they read it aloud in a group, how much they were able to go, oh yeah, well, this person is, this is what just happened. They would tell me, you know, what just happened. Everything. And we talk about imagery and all that other kind of stuff. And I just think that, I mean, as horrific as it is, I think that it has some of the most gorgeous imagery in it, you know? I mean, I don't know how else to put it. I mean, there's the stain that exists, the idea of a stain all the way through, pretty much. You know, there's a, you know, you can say there's a stain on his soul, and there's a stain, the witches sort of cast over everything, which is another thing that we've talked about doing in terms of having them play a more active role and being more involved. But I mean, this, just the idea of that not being able to get the stain off your hands, that imagery at the end, just has always fascinated me. So, thanks for coming in. I appreciate it. Thanks for listening to me talk for an hour.
Well, we had to let you have your therapeutic moment.
Good. Go ahead. I'm going to sit over here. I'll be right over here.
I want to see what Dr. Freud has to say about you wanting to stain everything.
Well,
yeah. You and Norm.
Yeah, well.
Yankee Workshop. Hand staining.
I'm still going to stick with Scottish accents for my scenes.
No, you please. Can we do that? I guess,
yes. You guys do whatever you want. But I'll see. My witches see on Halloween. Brooklyn.
I've got French because they're relational. What do you?
That's good.
They're witches that can get away with anything. They're pretty natural. So
yeah.
Makes them German.
German.
bubble.
toilet und Trouble.
I don't know that we should do that with the other play that we got going on this semester. The first show of the season. Yeah. Follow that, because we're going to follow that. You know, that's, I mean, that's such a hot plan.
Yeah.
How do you see the witches playing a deeper role in the show? How do you see that happening?
Well, I mean, put them in other scenes, and they do stuff.
Thank you for the depth of your answer.
Give
me an example. Give me an example.
Well, I think they could play the doctors. I think they could play the murderers. I think they could play the, because they kind of orchestrate the entire mess.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's important to have them referenced and, or not maybe referenced, but part of the action of the play.
Yeah. So that it's obvious to the audience that these are the same actors that are playing.
Okay. And so they give them a kind of a feel of being in control of the mayhem a little bit.
Yeah. And being able to relish in taking an active part in happening.
And that'll be enhanced if we go with the concept that we were talking about with costumes. If we get something very neutral, for example, black pullovers or turtlenecks or something, black jeans or whatever, and use costume elements for the characters, especially if there is a place from which they draw those costume elements that's in full view of the audience. Then the fact that these witches take on other roles and they're sort of almost constantly surrounding the central part of the action, I think is going to be, it'll make it that much clearer.
Mm-hmm.
If we are showing them as being witches that are taking other forms.
Yeah. What about the idea of relationships in general in this play? Obviously the most obvious one is the Macbeth, Lady Macbeth relationship, but there's a lot more depth going on there too. Well, how do you see that playing in?
Well, you know, you can apply a lot of modern therapy, I suppose, to this play and how dependent, for example, the two Macbeth. Ooh, did I said it?
You did.
Lord and Lady.
But there's
relationship
a line right
here.
Cross that line, you can't see it.
Well, I'm stuck in this chair. Anyway.
Yeah.
the fact that he probably would not have acted without her urging, and the fact that she could not have had any effect without using him as an instrument. I mean, they're both absolutely entwined with each other. The whole question of love isn't probably even much of a question, but it would be interesting to explore that as a sort of a version of love, a very needy version of love that has a destructive end. Mm-hmm. They're both very ambitious, and we cite ambition as one of the great positive things to look for when we hire people for a company or whatever. But here we've got vaulting ambition that ends up in murder, that ends up in war. And so to see these two people intertwined almost as though, well, for example, Adam and Eve, there's nobody else with whom to act in the Garden of Eden. So what we have is a deeply flawed man, but the deeply flawed woman actually enables his great sin. Well, why not, explore the complexities of that sort of two people acting as one in this play as well? I think it's fascinating.
No, it totally is. And the same thing applies too with like a more brotherly type of love between Banquo and Macbeth, and how that is just literally cloven in twain.
Yes.
How about that?
Yes.
Wow.
Like that. Yeah, I did. Banquo, by the way, was the part that I played in.
Was it really? Yeah. That's cool.
That was 37 years ago.
You didn't have to say that out loud.
Well,
I mean, I can edit that out. We'll backward mask that.
73 years ago.
Who'd you play again?
I played Duncan.
Oh, yeah.
I had a very boring time.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it was great until I was dead. And then I was
sitting around getting killed.
Yeah. And then I came back as one of the
Act two,
spirits.
Get a knife.
What is your essential action? Sitting around getting killed.
Yeah. Done.
Lay down, I die.
Yeah. It's kind of a fun life, I guess, if you think about it. Mm-hmm. Short, but...
Short, but happy.
Yeah.
Happy life of Francis McComber.
There it is.
So Lady and Lord and Lady are kind of the John and Kate of the Scottish world.
Yeah, I don't think I would have gone there, but that's good, yeah. Mm-hmm.
What though? I'm ambitious.
It's very true.
I'm actually...
very true.
At a disadvantage. I know that those people exist, but I don't see them. I just
know that their whole relationship blew apart very...
Publicly.
That's about all I know of it.
Yeah.
So dates are going to be the 30th and the 31st, Halloween, right? October. Mm-hmm.
I like the surety with what
Yeah, well, I'm just asking. Well, at this point,
we've got all,
oh, by
all,
the way,
All Hallows Eve and All Hallows Eve Eve.
Eve Eve. Good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we're doing a midnight showing on Halloween as well. Yeah.
So we'll go from All Hallows Eve into All Saints Day.
Yeah, we're doing All Saints Day production.
It's a story of redemption, really.
It is. Yeah. Well, that production will be.
So anyway, Steve is a multi-talented artist.
Really?
An artiste, even.
Are you an artiste?
I never go without the E at the end.
Yeah?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the George Carlin school.
Is that
Fool.
Right? Okay.
It's on his taxes. He put Fool.
F-O-O-L-E.
Yeah. Okay, well, tell us, what do you do?
I do drawings. I'm going to be moving into more than just drawings in the next few months. But yeah, I've got a website. It's athletic-art.com. www.athletic-art.com. Did I just say athletic? Yes.
Yes.
I'm
stuck on the word hyphen. That's
right. I'm used to typing.
Is that spelled out?
Right.
Or?
I'm used to typing it, and I'm going, it is athletic. Yeah, it's athletic-art.com.
Well, we'll link to it from the show notes of the thing here. But
well, thank you very much.
Do we have your permission to put an example of your artwork on the
Certainly.
Site as well?
Certainly. Can yeah, I'd love if you did that. Yeah.
Cool. Awesome. Yep. Well, that was awesome.
Well, yeah. I promise all over it, this site will be expanding like crazy, so keep coming back. And I haven't touched it in a year and a half. But I swear to God, I'm going to expand that site.
The promise is there.
It is now recorded.
Yeah, we
officially.
Got it.
Officially.
Yeah, this is going to go live on Monday, too, soon. Yeah,
yeah.
You better get with
soon
it.
Better. Yeah, yeah, soon is real soon.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that, guys.
So, all right, thanks all right. for stopping by.
Thank you.
If you love the Inexplicable Dumb Show like I do, don't be shy about it. Go ahead and wear your feelings on your sleeve, or at least your chest. Head on over to our Cafe Press store and wear your support for the IDS proudly. www.cafepress.com/dumbshow.
Well, that's it. We feel fresh now.
Yeah. I'm refreshed.
Like a summer's eve.
Man, there's so many places I could go with that right now, but I'm not going to.
Douche.
Oh. Thank you. Okay. Can we do a roll closing now?
That's it. I'm done.
Get it done. Out.
I'm spent.
Okay. real closing for 161. You're not going to get there without laughing. We need to show Becca that video, too.
Yeah.
All right. So we should thank Steve.
We should thank Steve.
But we're not going to. Coming okay. in and sitting down
we
with
pimped
us.
His artwork. What else
yeah,
can we do?
Yeah, that's true. We don't have to thank him. We help sell his artwork. So anyway, yeah. So that's it. That's what we're doing this year. Now, next week, we do actually have an idea of what we're going to be doing next week.
We do.
For a change. Our friend Jacob Coakley is going to be back on the show.
Stage direction.
Yep.
That's right.
Yep. Sweet. And we're gonna. I think he's going to talk. He said they've got some new initiatives coming up. And... some stuff with Theater Face, I think, and some stuff like that. So it sounds like he's pretty excited about it.
Well, outstanding.
So we'll hear what he's got to say next week.
Alrighty.
Hey, we'll see you.
Bye.
Blueberry. This podcast is a member of the Blueberry Network. Blueberry. No East. That's Blueberry, BLUBRRY.com. Blueberry.com.
Alternative Media.